Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden. I'm working at
an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Well, hello, everybody. Chuck Bonnell, Julie Hayden on a beautiful July Friday afternoon, Party Friday.
Party Friday.
Brought to you by?
This is the True Straight Up, Chuck Bonnell and Julie Hayden. Brought to you by happytrees.co, a great full-service landscaping and tree nursery company, along with Denver Synergenics and Dr. Julie McCallan. In fact, you got your email from her today.
Yes,
saying,
tip-top shape.
Telling you, actually, she did say, she said, maybe more vitamin B. It's like, if that's the worst thing, thank God for Julie McCallan. I'm going to talk to Representative Dave Williams. I want to talk ongoing grassroots versus establishment kind of issues. And then, as promised, we have our movie picks. So that'll come in the second half of the show after we talk.
And that should be good, because you're going to get the yin and the yang. Julie represents the middle brow, all-American girl. I represent culture and beauty and film.
Yeah.
So you'll get both.
I can just tell you right now, watch my movies, not Chuck's. If you watch Chuck's movies, be sure you bring reading material. That's all I'm going to say. Even you fall asleep in your movies.
Yeah. But anyway, greatest movies ever made. Some of the greatest drama ever made.
And Thomas has his as well. Uh-huh. But we're pleased to have with us now Representative Let's Go Brandon Dave Williams. Hey, Dave, welcome. Happy Party Friday to you.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, you bet.
Dave ran for CD5 and gave a great effort. Got Doug Lamborn below 50%, but since there were three candidates all together, ended up a little short. So it was kind of typical of the June 28th, where all the good, decent, honorable people lost to the awful, hideous establishment people. I consider Dave maybe the equivalent of the brightest minds on the grassroots side.
Dave, he said that you're the Republican grassroots Ted Trimpa.
And so, that's a compliment. And that is a
Ted
compliment.
Ted Trimpa being the sword of Soros, you're the antithesis of that.
Well, I'll take the compliment. I wish I had the same kind of money that Ted had actually.
Well, there you go.
What can you do?
Let's talk about that. What sort of, your analysis of what happened, I mean, not just in your race, but sort of across the board and why, and then eventually want to talk a little bit about what do we do besides move to Florida?
Right, for sure. Well, I mean, I think first off, we have to qualify this, right? We have to assume, with this discussion, this analysis, that the elections were fair. And I say that very cautiously, because I still have deep mistrust of the election process. And, we don't have the ability to look under the hood in Colorado. So we're kind of in a terrible limbo, as you can imagine. But assuming that the elections were fair and on the up and up, which I'll let your listeners decide, if they want to go with that or not. But assuming it was. I think the moral of the story here is that our side was outspent. They took our message and outspent us, right? So the silver lining, in all of this is that our message does work. It does resonate, especially with Republican primary voters and unaffiliated voters. Not all unaffiliated voters, but, a good portion of them, because that's essentially what they did, throughout the state. I saw it in El Paso County. And I certainly saw it in, your neck of the woods in CD8.
Yeah, well, County, yes,
in Douglas County. And, they were using our messaging. I'll put it to you this way. None of the establishment candidates were campaigning as establishment. They weren't saying, elect us and you'll have the status quo. Elect us and we'll be selling out with Democrats, right? They didn't do any of that. So I think that's the one thing that we can, be happy about, is that our message works. We just need to put money behind it.
I know I've heard it 1,000 times from grassroots people. Money isn't everything. And the answer to that is no, but it's the most important thing. And if it's lots of money versus no money, no money is going to lose. If it's lots of money against some money, and you've got a great candidate, you can overcome that. But here, it was by and large, Hugh McCain, the idiotic, moronic leader of the Republicans in the state house. How much did he pour in? $250,000? He, not personally, but others pour in for
him? He actually got the lion's share from what I've been seeing and hearing. I think he got $600,000 spent in his favor. From outside groups. You had other candidates that, you know, he wanted, you know, to win in their primaries, getting $250,000 here, $250,000 there. I mean, all in total, if you look at, you know, everything that was spent, and I think the Colorado Sun reported on this. You know, you're looking in the millions of dollars spanning over various House seats. And that's
sort of
unprecedented. But
help us put that in perspective in terms of how much more is that than usual, and not only that, but how much, if he had $600,000, how much did his would a grassroots opponent have? Or maybe talk about the Lamborn campaign and your campaign. Can you help us put in perspective just how much we were outspent?
Oh, I mean, fraction of that. Hugh McKean, his opponent. You know, he raised a decent amount, but nowhere near to compete, you know, with $600,000 in outside spending. I think probably, I haven't looked at his specific stuff, but it was under $100,000 for sure.
No, it's 50 or 60, it was
Wow.
It's a respectable amount that his opponent raised, in normal circumstances. That's a great showing for a challenger facing a three-term incumbent who's the minority leader,
right?
But you can't get around $600,000 in spending, and so that I think, Chuck, to your earlier point, the grassroots has got to understand that knocking on doors, you know, and putting in the shoe leather work, you know, isn't going to cut it when you have hundreds of thousands of dollars and even millions of dollars flowing into these races. It's not possible. So, you know, the question is, what do we do, you know, looking forward? And I mean, the best thing we can do is figure out ways to increase the amount of fundraising to our efforts and to our side. We have to be able to convince, you know, wealthy people who are aligned with our principles that our message does work. And we can prove that. We certainly can prove it. Look at Hugh McKean's messaging. That's a great example. Again, Hugh McKean did not say, hey, I'm a pro-choice Republican, right? Please vote for me. He didn't say, oh, hey, I'm an establishment status quo Republican who won't do a damn thing for you if you vote for me. Like, he didn't campaign on that. He campaigned with our message. I'm a conservative. I back the blue. We need to fight crime, inflation, education, like everything that we would, you know, talk about, he talked about. He just put money behind it.
One thing, let me ask you, or get your thoughts on this, because one of the things I pointed out, we got to remember there is always, it's a psyop going on to make the grassroots people feel like we're all a bunch of nut jobs and we don't even have a chance. And so all of the headlines were, oh, the conservative election deniers, you know, were demolished. But that's really not true. In almost all of the races where there was an establishment candidate, for instance, in yours, Doug Lamborn, they didn't get the majority. They all just got a plurality. When you look at it, the grassroots candidates of whom, you know, versus the establishment candidate. The problem was also there were more than one grassroots or so-called grassroots candidate there. But to me, what that says is, though, the majority of people were not voting for the establishment candidate. The majority of people were voting for somebody else as well, right?
Well, I'd put it to you this way. I think, you know, the people who won their primaries and the people who lost their primaries, you know, need to avoid the trap that, you know, so often happens when we analyze these campaigns. And that's to think that the voting public, the people are, you know, in agreement with, you know, the winner, or they disagree with the loser. Campaigns are more or less a reflection of who was better at organizing their efforts and fundraising for those efforts. Okay. It doesn't mean that the public, you know, is in love with, you know, who they voted for. How could they be? Because look at the turnout.
Right.
The vast majority of the population didn't even vote.
Good point.
That look here in the eighth, Barbara Kirkmeyer. I mean, she has an F on the Liberty scorecard down at the state legislature. She's a rhino, a terrible rhino. She had David Cole, one of the dirtiest Republican operators around from El Paso, apparently giving out all the notice saying that Jan Kuhlman and Lori Sane were liberals.
Yeah.
And they spent hundreds of thousands of dollars. She totally defrauded everyone. And now we're all supposed to be thrilled because her and Nick Klebenstein, her campaign manager, are telling us, oh yeah, we all have to unite.
Now we have to unite.
Well, but they don't really care if we unite, to tell you the truth. And I'll give you an example of that down in your neck of the woods, Dave. And we've got the Lincoln Day dinner coming up August 13th.
Vicky Tompkins is the
chairperson. They got Lauren Boebert coming. And so what did the establishment do? Well, Eli Bremmer, who got a whooping 13%, notwithstanding having the endorsement of everyone in the world, is having at his house virtually every winner of this last election. 20, 30 people, everyone from Barbara Kirkmeyer and
to keep him from going to the party or to the dinner.
Yeah. Eric Odlin, you can just go down the list of these really kind of revolting people. Now, I'm going to go down, Julie and I are going to go down the El Paso one just to support
to the Lincoln
Vicky.
Day dinner. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it's typical. They're not coming to the Lincoln Day dinner saying, hey, okay.
Well, they boycotted it last year, right?
This year they're running on the exact same day with all their fraudulent candidates. So that's not them trying to go, hey, let's all get together.
Unify, yeah.
It's all screw you. And it's very hard for people to kind of go, oh, well,
I'll unify behind you.
I think it's a symptom of, you know, the establishment gets this mindset that when they win, that the conservative grassroots have no choice but to vote for them. So they kind of take it for granted.
Right.
And that's why they ignore the base. And that's why they always want to go, you know, pay attention to the elusive swing voter that they have no idea what the swing voter cares about. They don't.
Right.
If they did, we would, you know, have won more elections in the past 20 years and we haven't.
Right.
But I think that's more or less what's going on. I think in El Paso County, it's a bit more elevated because there is an open civil war down here. And right. I think both sides, they don't care to keep it quiet. So they're fighting and duking it out. And I encourage your listeners, go support Vicky Tompkins. She's been one of the best, you know, chairwomen we've had in El Paso County in a long, long time. And you wouldn't know it because the press doesn't want to accurately report on it. The establishment doesn't want to tell you, but we're in the black. We have volunteers. We're filling our vacancies. And that's all because of a conservative message and person leading it. So, our message works. It's just the establishment doesn't ever want to, you know, embrace us. And instead they take it for granted when they win a primary. They think we're going to bend the knee and vote for them. And the truth is there's a lot of people that aren't going to vote for these clowns. You know, let's take a look at Ron Hanks versus Joe O'Dea. Joe O'Dea is a pro-choice Roe versus Wade supporting Republican. I got to tell you, I've never voted for a pro-choice candidate ever, and I don't intend to in 2022. So, you know, he thinks he's going to win with swing voters. Well, Joe Day's got a problem with the Republican base, especially when they find out he'd vote to codify Roe versus Wade. So.
Right. Well, and that's one of the things we pointed out right after. I mean, Ron Hanks got some 260,000+ votes, right? And if Joe O'Dea thinks he's not going to need those votes to beat Michael Bennett, and you know, and I want to go back to something because I want to get to what you're talking about there too, because there's a great column, American Thinker, that kind of spelled a lot of this out. But just so folks understand the importance of money, because I think you're right. Too often, I think, because the establishment has all the money and grassroots doesn't have a lot, they think, oh, well, we'll overcome it with people knocking on doors. But talk a little bit about what does the money do that makes the difference that just enthusiastic door knockers can't accomplish?
Well, sure, you bet. I think people don't. Our side doesn't tend to just stop.
I just
want to
say this: Dave Williams, congressional candidate, and one of the brightest guys on the Republican side.
Right.
Go ahead, Dave.
I appreciate that. I mean, I think our side kind of needs to stop and think about it for a second. You know, for example, you know, everyone wants to, you know, walk and knock on doors, you know, on a Saturday. They want to take half a day to do that. And at best, you're going to hit maybe a couple hundred of doors, right? And then half of those doors, you're not actually going to meet the person that you're going to talk to. Well, if you take that same amount of time and you just go ask for money from people you know, or at least a list of potential donors, you can fundraise a couple thousand dollars and you can deploy that to some sort of mass marketing technique, whether it's text messaging, whether it's phone banking, whether it's mail, and you can hit thousands of people at once as opposed to, you know, the hundreds of people that you may or may not have actually contacted by walking and knocking on doors. Door knocking is a supplement, or should be at least considered a supplement to your overall campaign messaging strategy.
Okay.
So the deal is you have to fundraise to mass markets to folks. And that's the reality, because no one knows us. No one knows who you are. You have to introduce yourself to the voters, and you have to do it with a compelling message. And that just takes money, unfortunately.
Right. And this, well, and you know, I've told this story before, but many years ago when I was a Democrat, I worked on a Democrat congressional campaign in CD7, and the candidate, I mean, I was such a naive little person just coming from the media, right? I just thought, okay, we'll put out a great statement and we'll get him in front of, I know people, I can get him in front of cameras and newspaper. And they're like, oh no. I mean, literally the campaign manager was hired because he had his list of potential donors. And literally the candidate sat in an office, wasn't even allowed to dial the phone himself because he hated doing it. And so he took his time dialing the phone. So the campaign manager would dial the phone, hand it to the candidate, who would then beg for money and, you know, got some, right? But then the instant that, and there were a lot of, you know, our DCCC people, the Congressional Campaign Committee volunteers there, the instant he didn't hit a fundraising goal, didn't matter what the polls show, didn't matter how many volunteers he had, the minute he didn't hit a fundraising goal, all of those national people went away, like literally, like overnight. It was like amazing. And
that's because if you fundraise enough money and you can deploy it into the field, you can move the voters, you know, as much as 20%. I mean, you kind of have to look at it from this perspective. Like, so all the Patriot candidates all over the state, they at least got 30%. So right off the bat, you already know there's 30% of Republican voters that just want to know who's the most conservative, and they're going to vote for you. And then you have another 20% plus one that you got to reach and figure out, you know, how to persuade them. And, you know, if you're not fundraising enough to compete and you don't hit those fundraising goals, but your opponent is hitting those goals, then the moneyed interest or the national interest or whoever's, you know, interested in that very well may pull out of that race because they think it could be a lost cause if you don't hit those numbers. And it sucks. It really does suck. I don't like this part of the business, but how else can you reach the voter? And, you know, it's just something we can't get around. We have to either fundraise an adequate amount of money, or we just have to innovate, you know, in such a way where we can reach voters as cheap as possible.
No, okay. And I think that's a number one thing I think grassroots people need to realize. That, you know, grassroots people need to realize, just like you said, maybe rather than go knock on doors, go ahead. I mean, we're thinking, okay, well, what do? Hold a fundraiser at your house, right? Invite 10 people, five people.
Yeah. Hold fundraisers or get on the phone. Get on the phone with the candidate. I mean, it's not the most effective because the candidate, you know, if anyone's going to donate, it's typically because of the candidate. But that doesn't mean that grassroots folks can't call up 10 of their friends and say, hey, chip in a couple $100, just do it to me as a favor for this guy. I really trust him.
Right.
And you'll be surprised. That works well.
No, I mean, it's sales, right? That's a warm contact. You calling somebody, it's a cold contact, right? They don't know you, but if you're right. But if we call, well, that's something to keep in mind, grassroots people. And they say, okay, well, what can we do? I mean, that's something. Now, it's not fun. It's not nearly as fun as going out on a Saturday and having pizza and stuff like that, but it's more effective. And I think we need to realize that. The second thing is I want to talk about, and Chuck, you wrote the column too. It was an American thinker, Robin Eitzler, I think her name was. She was essentially, the column was not period, this period, year period. And she sort of went through the Groundhog Day insanity that grassroots go through. Every year we have great candidates, great grassroots candidates announce their candidacy. Then we have establishment candidates. The establishment candidates ignore the grassroots candidate.
Well, we got to get part two. Part two is the grassroots candidate starts making a difference.
Right.
Then the establishment comes in with their media allies, trashes the grassroots person as crazy or nuts or whatever else. And moreover, they're liberal or something. Lying like
either Cole. Trashing. Right.
And then they pour all the money in. The grassroots person loses, the establishment wins, and then they kind of go, okay, now
unify.
Now they don't even say unify. They do whatever you want. We don't care.
We don't care.
The party's so small that, you know.
And
she said, this year, at least for the congressional candidate, she's going to write in the grassroots person. She said, I just not going to play their fool again. I don't care how bad the opposite. But it's we had Dick Wadhams on here, and I love Dick. But he said, you know, any grassroots person who wins, I will not vote for. I refuse to ever vote for. And that's how the establishment does.
And he's not kidding.
No, he's not kidding. And more importantly, none of the donors will give any money. And so your real choice is to get some squish, get a Barbara Kirkmeyer.
Who then you can't trust
or Eric Odlin, or Eric's better than Barbara, but still, you know, Pam Anderson, the Zuckerbucks.
I mean, think about that hypocrisy. And Dick Wadhams, he is, to his credit, a smart guy. He knows a thing or two about winning elections, but think about the hypocrisy coming from that. Right. Well, Dick Wadhams says, I'm never going to vote for Ron Hanks. Okay. Well, then why the hell should any of us vote for Joe O'Day?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, why should we get criticized by any of his side for something that he wouldn't do if the shoe was on the other foot? I mean, this is the problem. The grassroots and the establishment, we're at odds, and mainly we're at odds because we know that the establishment candidate is not going to actually institute change. They're not going to do anything different than what the Democrat is already doing. And so why the hell do we want them to be our nominee? Just so that our side can, quote, win? What's the point of winning if we actually don't reform the system? And that's why we have, you know, problems in our camp. The establishment, they don't care. They just want Team R to win because they're Team R. And who the hell cares when you have $30 trillion in debt nationally, hundreds of trillions of dollars in unfunded liabilities, and our country going to hell in a handbasket. I don't give a shit.
And you have a third of the U.S. senators. U.S. senators vote for gun control.
Right.
I mean,
yeah. Who cares if the Republican Party wins, but our country ends up going down the tubes?
Right.
The problem that the other side in our party doesn't, I don't know if they don't want to account for it, or they just don't care. But at the end of the day, if they're going to win, they need us.
Right.
And so I guess what I tell your listeners is, you know, don't feel obligated to vote for anyone. You know, if any of these candidates want your support or they want your vote, they better go damn well earn it. And if they don't earn it, well, you decide.
Right. But, well, that's what
I'm not going to bend the knee. I'm not going to bend the knee to Dick Wadhams or the establishment just because they're the nominee. That's not America. Well, and that's not how it should work.
And that's what this comment is pointing. She goes, okay, so if you're grassroots, and I mean, and she was, I think, from California. So she was, but I'm reading this and I'm like, this is exactly Colorado. Your options are, she said, number one, to just not vote at all. Number two, vote for whatever race. If there's somebody running that you really like, go ahead and vote for that person. Write in the grassroots candidate, which may or may not, you have to, there's certain,
count.
Yeah. Or she said, just like you, that's where it was sort of like not period, this period, year period. She was saying, her argument was that whatever, this is supposed to be a red wave, right? And so if grassroots can send a message, hey, you know, you aren't even reaching out to us, you don't care, you don't represent us, no, we're not going to vote for you, then you the establishment guys are going to have to explain why everybody else won and you didn't. And rather than if they win, then they remain in power. And, you know,
well, more than that, now they've got a base of operations. They can take the money that the national groups will give them and otherwise to destroy anybody on the grassroots side who opposes them. I remember Mike Kaufman was perk about that. Little nice Mike Kaufman, some business guy decided he'd run, and they did everything to destroy his life. And that's what they did.
Yeah, I mean, I think the voters, because I genuinely think that most voters in the Republican Party, you know, agree with us.
Yes.
Case in point, the establishment campaign like we would. They just had money. But right. I think, you know, what your listeners and the voters should really start to think about is what we see, you know, time and time again, where the Republican Party is not in power, but they want to be in power, and they promise us the world. They're like, just give us power and we'll make everything better. And then we collectively give them power, and then they don't do anything when they get it.
Right.
I mean, my God, well, they've gotten more
brazen about it. So they asked McConnell, okay, if you get a majority of the Senate, what are you going to do? And he says, well, that's a good question. I'll find out once we're in the majority.
Right.
No idea.
And so I think we need to start sending a message to these guys. Like, look, you know, we've been down this trail too many times. You either deliver or you don't. And if you don't deliver, well, enjoy being in the minority.
Right. Right. Well, and I think, you know, because we talked a lot about it, Chuck and I, and our listeners have talked a lot about it. And I see Charlene in there, and Charlene was like, don't vote. And it's a dilemma, right? Because on the one hand, but I agree with you. It's like, there's very little point. I mean, if you vote for Joe O'Day, is he going to really be any different than Michael Bennett, who he's contributing money
to? It's like an abusive relationship, right? We're the battered wife, right?
Right.
And the spouse keeps hitting us and abusing us, but then they apologize and they sweet talk us, and then we give them a chance, and then they continue to beat us. And so I think it's come high time that the Republican Party be reformed. And the best way to do that is to withhold support.
As a practical matter, I've missed the sweet talk.
Yep.
When did the sweet talk happen?
There was no. Well, and it isn't, to continue that analogy, it is sort of like, so if you're in the abusive relationship, you say, well, I'm going to stay here because I don't know what I'll get if I leave, right? Well, you're never going to find out what you get if you don't leave, right? So it takes, I guess you're right, sort of a leap of faith to say, hey, it couldn't be any worse. It's the same, you know, the same thing. So I'm leaning more and more this way, Dave. Actually, I don't even think leaning isn't the right word anymore. I think you're right. I think it is time that if you're a grassroots Republican, you know, no one's going to pay attention to us or listen to us or bring us into their tent unless you make them. And you know, like I said, that column, you guys, I encourage you all to go read an American Thinker, not period, this period, year period. So,
you know, here's a good story. And I think it matters. I think it was Ralph Nader. I believe it was Ralph Nader. He ran third party and the Democrats lost, and they asked Ralph Nader, you know, hey, are you happy now? And his response was, well, maybe the party will start paying attention to the left.
Yeah.
And they sure as hell started doing that. And I got to tell you, the Republican Party is taking conservatives for granted, and they need us to win. So I wouldn't just hand over my vote just because, well, it's a Republican. No, I think we've done that for too many years, and we get, you know, subpar standards as a result.
All right. Well, Dave, thank you.
Thanks so much,
yes,
Dave.
Yes, like I said, Chuck was like, he's the Ted Trimpa of the Republican Party here.
You decide to do when you grow up, let us know.
Yeah, because we'll be there for you.
We'll do. Right.
Thanks a lot.
All right. Dave, take care. Dave, let's go Brandon Williams there. You know, again, it's, and he's right. One of the bigger things I think two grassroots people need to understand is money. Money matters, right? Money matters.
Unfortunately, it matters far more than you like. It just, and it's sad because that's really why the system is so bad. That's why you get, you end up with you know, you get the government you deserve.
Right.
And that's what we're getting is the government we deserve.
That's right. And you guys, you've had some great comments here. I'm looking, Leo saying, Julie, it's like deciding to leave an abusive boyfriend. You're right. It's not easy. You know, and but you, and you think, well, I don't know, maybe what we get will be even worse. It's like, well, you're never going to find out if you don't leave. Charlene is like, LOL, Chuck, where was a sweet talk? I missed it too. I'm with Dave all the way. So Charlene, you get Dems when we vote in rhinos. So enough of that, you guys. There were great comments there. We'll go back to this because I think this is something I want to talk a lot about, because I think there are things that can be done and there is hope. And as Dave said, they ran with our messaging, right? Yeah. So our messaging wins. It wasn't that the message is wrong. Right. They keep trying to tell us that. It's that they had more money. And the reality is money makes a difference. So, all right. So now though, we're switching. It's Party Friday to top movies. And I want you guys to weigh in too. And TJ will bring you on here in a second too. And you can put yours in. I don't know, TJ, if you want to talk, our producer, TJ, he can talk. If not, you can just go ahead and type them in and he'll read it. But, as we talked about, Chuck and I have different tastes.
Start with your lowest, not your highest.
Well, mine, you know, I have too many movies I like. So mine are in clumps. I will say in clumps of this. Okay, TJ's a little shy to come and talk, but he'll message us with the list. Oh, what's the best drink for each movie? This is an easy one for me.
Vodka.
Leo, yeah, Tito's club soda and a lime.
Or a shot of Jack,
that's right. Okay, Charlene says Summers B, Richard Gere, Existential Questions. Okay, Charlene, I can already tell you're going to be more like Chuck. My number one movie.
No, start at the bottom. You always start at the bottom.
I would say the bottom of my favorite movies are the Fast and Furious.
Fast and Furious
one, even Tokyo Drift, which was one that didn't have Vin Diesel in it.
Okay, my 10th one is Gladiator with Russell Crowe, Joaquin Phoenix, Ridley Scott. You know, normally you see these movies about Rome, people wearing the Roman clothes look like they're actors wearing these weird outfits.
Right.
In this one, they actually inhabit it. You know, you could see the elegance and the beauty of the clothing. And you could also feel.
That's not why I like them.
It was spectacular how they, you know, the Roman troops looked the part. I mean, and the Colosseum looked like the Colosseum, and the blood and the opening battle sequence is just devastating. So a great movie and a more recent movie.
And Charlene agrees with you. And I'm going to use that, though, to jump off to my number one.
You can't do number one. It's the bottom. It's the bottom.
Okay. My second clump of movies that are my top, the bottom of my top favorite are any John Wick movies. Yeah. I love John Wick movies. Is he on your list?
Slaughter. Of course not.
Come on. Give me a break.
If you want to get into actual gunfighting and so forth, that's my number nine. High Noon with Gary Cooper. He's unbelievable in it. He's suffering from cancer actually in the movie. And so the pain is real, and that it's done in real time. It's an hour and a half of real time. And it's incredibly well done, beautifully acted. And it's just the best Western in my mind. Behind that is The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, but number nine would be High Noon.
Okay, now this is from TJ, our producer. His list is number one.
You start at the bottom.
His number five. I would agree with some of these because these are mine too, Thomas. Thor Ragnarok. I just watched it the other day. That was good. Along with Avengers Infinity War. Yep. Godfather 1. That's a great one. He's got yours, Gladiator. And his number one is Star Wars Revenge of the Sith. I haven't seen that one. Johnson says Johnny Depp, Dark Shadows. And Thomas says High Noon was a good movie. Charlene says, well acted High Noon, but Liberty Valance better. Okay. What's your, there's a theme in mind. My next top rank one to mine would be, this is the number six clump. Okay. The Matrix, the first two. Well, maybe first one of the one. Later ones. Yeah. Not all of them, but the Matrix is.
It's a good movie.
I've
tried to do different genres. So my number
different genres too.
All slaughter of bonds.
Number
eight is, I'm not a big musical fan, but the best musical ever done was Singing in the Rain with Gene Kelly. It's not easy to go dancing and singing and come across as masculine, but Gene Kelly managed to do that. He directed the movie, he starred in the movie. It's the best musical I've ever seen, in 1952. If you haven't seen it, even if you don't like musicals, give it a try.
Thomas says Singing in the Rain was great. They watched that in class. Okay, yeah. Then my next one's coming up there. I guess you're right. These are sort of slaughterathons.
I guess. John Wick.
Some are not. let me get into my science fiction ones. Okay. Sicario. Sicario's one and two. Those were like kind of cartel ones. Those are very good too.
My next one is Casablanca. Humphrey Bogart, Ingrid Bergman, Claude Rains.
Chuck, you don't have you made any that were made since I was born?
Yeah, Gladiator was, and some of the others. It's just a great movie. It's one of those that wasn't intended to be a great movie. When Ingrid Bergman said, you know, she thought it'd be a mediocre movie, never watched it for 30 years, surprised everybody liked it, and she watched it one day and said, that's a great movie.
Charlene is like, Julie, I've never even seen your movies. Charlene! You haven't seen any of the Avenger movies? Because that's my next clump. I'm with TJ there, and I like them. You know what, Charlene? You might like Sicario. Those are kind of, hers is Dr. Zhivago, number one. Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one.
All right, my next one is The Seven Samurai by Kuri, Japanese director. If you ever saw Mannequin 7 and enjoyed that, we ought to see the Seven Samurai, which is really what they Hollywoodized Seven Samurai. And Kuri did, he directed, he co-wrote it. It's one of the great movies, and it's a slaughter-a-thon, but just so well done.
Sicario is well done too, as is John Wick.
John Wick is not. Sicario is done well.
But Chuck and I are in deep. Yeah, Charlene, it's like, right. Johnny, Jim Jackson says Roman Holiday the best. My next kind of clump are the Lord of the Rings movies. I love those. I could watch those once a year. Those are good. See, there's only orcs get slaughtered in those.
That's a lot of the next one of mine, Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah, that's
based
good.
On a novella by Stephen King, Tom Robbins, Morgan Freeman, Frank Darabont's the director. It is a tremendous. I remember seeing it when it came out. It got no publicity. It got no praise, anything else. And then around the Academy Awards, they started directing it. Now it's usually on the top five lists of films. But it's wonderful. I just love the job that Morgan Freeman did and Tom Robbins. It's just, what a story.
And this is, Charlene says she's in deep with you, except for she thinks Flashdance is in top 10. Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one too. Okay, my next one, because I'm almost at the top of mine because I did mine in clumps. This is a great science fiction movie. If you haven't seen it, it's Interstellar with Matthew McConaughey. I won't even try to explain it, but it's really cool. It's a kind of movie you could watch a few times, I think, and be like, whoa. It's a good one. Well, no one's ever heard of my movies.
I'll go with Godfather 2, Marlon Brando, Francis Ford Coppola. The amazing thing about the Godfather one, so if you actually read the novel, which they're based on by Mario Puzo, it stinks. And Francis Ford Coppola just turned a real potboiler, mediocre novel into one of the great cinematic stories of all time. Both one and two. Sometimes they like one better. I think somebody else had one also, one or two. But the Godfather 3 sucks. But one and two are the
similar. And that's what Charlene says, we need to do the top 10 in each genre. There are just too many top 10s. Mm-hmm. That's true. And then my number one movie of all time, and this goes with your director, Ridley Scott, is Alien. Mm-hmm. Alien. And now I can elaborate on the Alien because they kind of go off the deep end. Alien 1 and Alien 2 are really good. Alien 1 is still the kind of one that makes you jump. It's just really well done. They kind of go off the deep end a little bit. And then when you get into this is also good, but I would not put in a top 10, Alien versus Predator. I also like Predator. I know. If you guys ever seen the movie Predator, well, they actually put together, you would think this is a joke, but there must be a lot of people out there like me. There's actually an Alien versus Predator movie, and who wins, the alien with the acid blood or the predator with the little dreadlocks? I forget who wins. That is not one of my top 10, but Alien is one of my top 10 too. Dr. Donna says the first one is good.
My next one, Schindler's List. Spielberg. It should be an incredibly depressing movie because it's about the Holocaust, but somehow it's incredibly life-affirming. Liam Nelson's great, Ralph Fiennes as the Obergruppenführer. And Ben Kingsley, just a wonderful movie, life affirming, and some of the darkest humor I've ever heard. But that leavens the movie and makes it tolerable somehow. On the
there's a lot of dark humor in John Wick, Chuck.
Yeah,
there's no humor. If you want to keep telling us your show, your movies too, you can do that. Okay, you keep going because
The next one is the Battleship Potemkin.
I don't think I've ever even seen that.
Of course, you haven't seen it. It's a 1927 movie in Russia from Sergei Eisenstein. It's about the 1905 revolution in Russia. And the most amazing part is the scene from the Odessa steppes. Now, we may see more Odessa steppes in the next few months. no, really, you are going to see the Odessa steppes. But it's an amazing film because it's the first silent film I'd ever really watched with any intent. And I went, this is great. I all of a sudden understood the art form. So if you haven't seen Battleship Potemkin, you
that's really it, Charlene. That's what he was saying. Okay, then Charlene is, oh my gosh, Julian's a special effects movie guard. That's very true. Who is John Wick? Okay, so if you guys haven't seen John Wick, which I can't believe, because he's all over in memes. He's like meme central. So John Wick is Keanu Reeves, as I say his name, right? And basically, he's like a hired... Well, he works, his world is all a bunch of hired assassins, and they have a safe hotel somewhere in various portions of the country, or the world rather. And it is, I don't know how to describe it, right? It's just pretty cool to watch. It's very special effects-y, very cool effects. And it is a slaughter effect.
All right. Yeah. No, you're kidding.
But somehow in a non-gory way. I mean,
it's a non-gory way. Everybody's killed.
Flipping in slow motion, and they speed up, and then goes, you know, and then all of a sudden they're on to the next person. Yeah, I mean, pretty much everybody dies, but you don't ever really see any dead people in it or blood.
No, you do see lots of dead people, but not much blood.
It's stylized. Well, the dead people, they don't seem.
Well, my top one is Citizen Kane. Orson Welles' incredible masterpiece about William Randolph Hearst, just beautiful. He never directed a movie before. We got Greg Toland as cinematographer, and has some of the greatest cinematography that's ever been done. And it's just a tremendous movie. And I'll give my bonus pick, which is Long Good Friday, which is never on any lists. Friday is about British gangsters in London. It's everybody speaking with a Cockney accent, so you got to get used to that. And it's similar to the Old Man series and Terminalist. It's one of those you have to pay attention. You know, it's not just handed up on a platter to you. You know, who's that and why is that and who's that? But it's a fascinating, great movie. Long Good Friday. You got to go see.
All right, now this is from Kieran Cadley. My husband and I don't have the same taste either, but I never dream my tastes are like Chuck's, and my husband's are just like Julie. He says, I loathe John Wick. Scott loves it. How can you loathe John Wick? Karen says, Scott says John Wick is a love story. It's totally a love story. It's totally a love story.
Killing people as well.
Well, he's killing people because they killed his wife. And as Leo says, he killed his dog. And then Charlene, special effects annoy me. I want story and intrigue and character development.
Yeah, that's it.
You know, and
there you go.
There's a plenty of character development in John Wick.
Yeah, sure there is. He really changes.
And in Fast and Furious, a lot of character development.
Oh, man,
initially,
massive.
They were bad guys. Now they work with law enforcement and The Rock.
Who are the bad guys?
And Alien, talk about character development.
Alien character development.
I mean, a lot of character development.
Those aliens are changing and evolving and improving.
And then Avengers? No. Well, you know, I will say this in my defense, because I have a theory on why I have these kind of tastes. For 40
years, I'm mentally ill.
No, for 40 years, I was the crime and cops reporter. And I just, to me, movies have always been just an escape. You know, I just want something funny. And I don't even really actually mind if I don't remember it. I mean, I'm the kind of person who'll watch a movie and I'm like, oh, this looks good. And then about a third of the way, and I'm like, hey, I think I saw this already.
Five times.
Right, five times. But it just, so
she'll watch entire series. She'll go down here in the Royal Headquarters and just binge watch the world's worst film series ever. Forever. Now, you know.
Oh no, John Wick sounds predictable. Here's the thing, Charlene, and I would just encourage you, give it a shot, or Karen Cameron, you can weigh in on this too. It's, you know, I guess you could say, well, The Godfather's predictable too, right?
No, and it's not predictable. John Wick is predictable. Well, he's going to kill all the people. It'll look impossible that he can kill 10,000 people, and he'll survive, and he'll go home with a few.
I mean, it's
incredibly predictable.
Well, so is The Godfather.
No,
you know?
The Godfather is not predictable. No, it's not.
Oh. Well, you know, The Godfather people are going to win, and
they don't win. They get slaughtered. Well, Marlon Brando gets shot. What are you talking about?
He comes in part two, right? So he doesn't
He's not in part two.
Oh, I thought you said he was in there in part two.
No.
Okay. Well, either way, I have a hard time defending that, Charlene, I admit. The Americans is the best series of all time. Oh, and then Charlene says that's predictable killing over and over. Mm-hmm. John Wick, they called it gung-fu, all too planned. Yeah, you know, part of it too, though, is maybe because a little bit, I like the special effects because I get a kick out of seeing, like with the Mission Impossible ones, how they do it. To me, it's just kind of interesting too.
So what happens here at the Bonneville household is Julio kicked. Cook us a nice meal and all that. And then she'll say, hey, you want me to pick out a film? And then Rev or 11-year-old and I go, no, we don't want you to pick a film. God, no, don't pick out a film. Go downstairs. Leave us alone. No, please, I'm saying,
I like some of the ones. Gladiator, I think, is great. When they're some of my favorites. What I don't.
Well, anyone that I picked out, I promise you, if you watch it, you'll love it because they're just great drama, great acting. Great directing. They're great films and great filmography. So any of those that I've named,
What about Modern Times? I mean, let's talk about that. So you liked, I mean, I wouldn't call it one of the great films of all time, but you liked Top Gun.
I didn't see Top Gun.
The old one.
I didn't like the old one.
Oh, I thought you watched it and said you didn't. I didn't think
it was quite as bad as I remember.
Oh, you know, Lou, yeah, we'll put the list up. Oh, here's from Charlene. Charlene, I agree with you on here. In fact, we just kind of binge watched all of those. Dances with Wolves, Braveheart, mm-hmm. and Last of the Mohicans. Yeah, yes, I would agree with you on those. Yeah, those are all very good. What was the other one? The Brad Pitt one? Not a river. Was it A River Runs Through It? I think A River Runs Through It.
That's kind of okay.
That was, that was good too.
It's kind of boring, but it's okay.
And then Karen, yeah, everybody, Thomas agrees with you. Legends of the Fall. That's it, Charlene. Yeah, I like that one. Did you like that one? I don't know they put it on my top list, but, and then what's the other one? The Brad Pitt one, Troy? That where you see his butt?
Yeah.
That was kind of good too. That was kind of like Gladiator.
No, it wasn't like Gladiator. Gladiator is a great movie. Troy was an okay movie.
It was an okay movie. All right. Love it. Top 10 Legends of the Fall. Okay. From Thomas, Braveheart is good. Karen Catalina says, you mean Modern Times by Charlie Chaplin?
Great
film.
Movie. Great film.
I haven't seen that one either. Karen, well, you know, Karen, if we ever come visit you, Scott and I will go.
Yeah, one room.
Go sit with the big screen. And then you and Chuck can sit there. What are some other good, what about comedies? I'm trying to think of comedies.
Some Like It Hot is Funny with Tony Curtis and all that. That's considered one of the great comedies.
Some of the, yeah, comedies. I have to say, this is, okay, you guys are going to not like this one either. I remember, this is not one of my favorite movies at all.
But the
Chevy Chase, the Vacation ones, you know, like the National Lampoon's Vacation ones. Mm-hmm. I remember years ago, I was in Hawaii and I was trying to sleep and my then husband, Jenny's dad, was watching that. And I was so annoyed I was trying to sleep, but it just kept like chuckling and funny. He was like, you're laughing at this. I'm like, no, I'm not. And then they'd say something. It's one of those ones where it's incredibly stupid, but it was pure.
Well, how about great golf movies.
Oh, here's from Johnny. Blues Brothers. Yeah. Charlene, Jack Lemmon. Yep. Time Machine, remake from the 1960s, remade 2003. Okay. Fortune Cookie, Overboard with Goldie Hawn. Yes, that's a good one too. Okay. Caddyshack from the.
Caddyshack. You got to love Caddyshack.
Yep.
And what was the one with Kevin Costner as a pro who
Tin Cup.
Tin Cup. It's not a great movie, but it's fun.
And this from Jacob. What happened to Titanic? Wasn't that the most money-making movie ever?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
I didn't particularly care for Titanic. Although it's been way replaced now by all of my movies. My world's worst but best grossing movies ever. Well, we got some more coming up. On this from Karen. Cat. Animal House, Blazing Saddles, and Young Frankenstein. Yes, those are funny. Oh, Jacob, Field of Dreams. We watched that not that long ago. If you guys haven't seen Field of Dreams lately,
it's really good.
Yeah, check it out. It was good. From Charlene, No Way Out, Kevin Costner. Yeah. Here was the worst movie Kevin Costner ever made. Even I did not like this movie, Waterworld. Have any of you guys seen Waterworld for Kevin Costner?
Mad Max, though, which, Waterworld's a spinoff of that, was great.
Yeah,
I like Mel Gibson. The Mad Max ones; they're really good.
And then this is from Leo Schar. Yes, No Way Out was great. I don't remember that one. What was that? Do you remember No Way Out? What was that about?
No,
You know what? A Beautiful Mind with Russell Crowe was also good. That was another good. See, I have some that are good.
They're none listed on your list, though.
If they could have put some car chases in, or maybe an
alien. Some more people. And it
I like science fiction. I mean, I could throw in a bunch of the Star Trek movies, the early ones too, even though they're hokey, and any movie with Amber Heard. No.
Yes.
Are there any movies with Amber Heard in
there? Yeah, plenty of them.
There was that music with, that musical with Russell Crowe and Hugh Jackman. Was it Les Miserables? Is that how you spell it? Or was it?
No, it wasn't
the one where he was P.T. Barnum?
I think it's The Entertainer.
There was one where Showman. Yeah, Hugh Jackman was P.T. Barnum,
right.
Oh, Julie, watch it again. You have to watch No Way Out twice to get it. Okay, I'll do that. I'm trying to think of any other. We've got genre. I like science fiction. You don't really like science fiction.
I like some science fiction. Yeah, I mean, well, I enjoyed the first two Star Wars.
I think you liked Interstellar. We watched that. There's another one that's tricky. If you guys like science fiction, it was Les Mis. Okay. Fahrenheit 451.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that for a long time. There was another. This is a tricky science fiction one. If you haven't seen it, is Inception. That's kind of a cool one too. That's very good. Okay, it was about post-French Revolution. Okay, well, Hugh Jackman was in an okay movie that he sang in, and he was P.T. Barnum.
Les Miserables is Hugo's great novel.
I didn't know that Russell Crowe and Hugh Jackman were in that.
I don't think they were.
Yes, they were? It might be, yeah. Okay. You're thinking of The Greatest Showman. That's right. Which was recent, correct.
All right, so ignore all of Julia's movies. If you haven't seen any of the movies I just gave out, do yourself a real treat and watch it. You'll love it. They're great drama.
Well, if any of mine, I would say this is gritty. I mean, it's not a cheerful one. But I would say two movies of mine. If you haven't seen them, I encourage you to watch Alien and Sicario. Sicario. Those are kind of
different type of slaughter fest, but you've now got the idea that if there's not a slaughter fest involving humans and aliens and Mexican cartel and wherever else.
Alien was all right. Yeah. Off topic. Oh yeah. Jacob, we'll get into this. Maybe Tina Peters' attorney is Harvey Steinberg. What's that all about? Yeah. And apparently he's now claiming responsibility for not, the judge issued an arrest warrant for her because she sent it. And Harvey's like, it was all his fault. So we'll see about that. Yep, we'll see. A Clockwork Orange.
Yeah,
Charlene, that. I'm laughing so hard. Alien was all right. I like more psychological horror, though. I lived through that. No, I'm kidding.
Psycho. There's
yeah, oh, that was a good one.
Yeah, another, Vertigo.
The Haunting of Hill House is an old scary one, too. So,
All right.
That's going to do it for us. Guys. Thank you for everybody participating. We'll have to do this more often. We'll think of genres and get everybody time to do it. And we will see you all on Monday. Everyone have a great weekend. Remember, chuckandjulie.com. Thank you to everyone on Zoom.
Thanks, Steve, for Dave Williams for joining us. He really is a brilliant guy.
And all you great guys at BBS. We'll see you on Monday.
Bye-bye.